The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's been another busy news week, and we like to review the major stories of the week here on the Black Information Network. Today, we are joined by Black Information Network news anchors Terry McCready and Kevin Brown to discuss this week's major stories. This is the Black Information Network Daily Podcast, and I'm your host, Ramses Jha. All right, Terry McCready, it has been so long since we last spoke. How have you been?
It has been ages. I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm fantastic. Much better now. My man, Kevin Brown, it's been about the same amount of time since we last spoke as well. You been doing all right over there?
Yes, sir. Every day is a good day.
Right. That's what I want to hear. Okay. Well, then let's not keep the people waiting any longer to hear from the two of you. First up, our story. After just a few months on the job, Dr. Freddie Haines announced his resignation as president of the Chicago-based Rainbow Push Coalition. News of his decision has created lots of speculation behind his reasons for stepping down. Terry, let's start with you. Tell us more about this story, and then Kevin will come to you next, since you cover the Chicago market for the Black Information Network.
Okay, so just to offer a bit of a preamble, putting this, the Rainbow Push Coalition, into some context. It was founded by Reverend Jackson in 1971. Sure. And as you just mentioned, yes, the national headquarters are in Chicago. There are regional branches in cities like Washington, D.C., and Atlanta, New York City, and New Orleans, a couple of other cities as well. And I would say that the mission statement encapsulates public awareness of political issues, voting rights initiatives, advocating for Black communities, and affirmative action. And so Dr. Haines was announced as Reverend Jackson's successor. This was last July. He was formally installed this past February with much pageantry. But now some say that ultimately his resignation is connected to what they say is a difficult financial situation. And as we know with any organization, once financial constraints are being introduced, operating effectively then becomes a great challenge. Mm-hmm. And so it is painfully unfortunate if that is the case, you know, for an entity that is so important, so vital, symbolic, and emblematic in our communities to face any sort of economic challenge, much like many nonprofits providing services nationwide and delivering, you know, on a message of peace and justice and economic equality. So I'm sure this was a very difficult decision for Dr. Haines, as well as the greater coalition. And he did, of course, say that he expressed continued commitment to RPC and its legacy. So it's sort of a bittersweet ending. You know, obviously he'll still be involved in some way, but not leading the organization. So it's very sad the way this has turned out.
Mm. Kevin, let's get you to weigh in.
Well, we'll just read between the lines here. Thank you, Terry. When Dr. Haines took the torch, he didn't realize that Reverend Jesse Jackson's hand was still on it. I think he started to take on water when he issued a statement suggesting that there was a new leadership model needed for the PUSH organization, and not realizing that the Reverend Jesse Jackson was still involved intimately on how operation that he founded was going to operate. And it's not surprising that in that kind of a situation, when it's time for a new leadership model, those who have been a part of that organization for decades, there was a little bit of pushback. And I'm sure that in some of the pushback occurred from the people who had been there for decades and operated in the same manner in which the Reverend Jesse Jackson operated the organization. And quite frankly, with the new media and social media and all of the changes involving the civil rights battle now, it's not surprising that there was the Reverend Haynes, he ran into headwinds.
Sure. I could see that. You know, I'll be honest. Well, first off, you know, Terry, what you were mentioning in terms of how important the organization is, one of the early organizations that I became a fan of when I was in college was the Rainbow Coalition. And that, of course, was founded in Chicago by Fred Hampton. And I just loved his approach to activism involving all marginalized communities and finding the commonality in our shared struggles for equity in this country. I just felt like that was a powerful play and that we were in the best position to provide assistance elsewhere. And they were in the best position to support us being Black people. And so to know that has the DNA of that has lived on. It's not, you know, one-to-one, but the DNA in that has lived on. In the Rainbow Push Coalition was something that I always appreciated. And if I'm honest, I had hoped, you know, I'm hearing from you two today because I could not get any insider info. You two are a little bit more connected on the ground. But I had hoped that, you know, when I watched the video of him kind of explaining his reasons and so forth, I'd kind of hoped for maybe there was a bigger opportunity somewhere, or maybe there was some sort of political aspirations or something like that, that Dr. Haynes would be able to kind of take advantage of, something that would allow him to really, you know, make a bigger splash with his activism and his brilliance as a Black leader. And, you know, the fact that he's going to continue to work with them, I think that is, of course, the silver lining. That's the bittersweet part of it. But yeah, knowing that, you know, this organization, at least he felt this organization needed a modern approach to activism, a modern perhaps structure to the organization. And that was probably a difficult thing for him to pull off, considering how old the organization is and how established is the word I should use, not old. And then also to know that they potentially are running into some financial issues is a little bit concerning, but hopefully they will persevere and continue to be an effective organization. And of course, Dr. Haynes will continue to be an influential figure for our people. So moving on, this one's a little grim, so forgive me in advance, but the executor for the estate of O.J. Simpson made news earlier this week when he made an unpopular announcement on how the family will handle the former football star's remains. Kevin, this time we're going to start with you. Give us some more details on this story, and then Terry, we're going to follow up with you next.
Yes, the executor of the estate O.J. Simpson, his longtime attorney, Malcolm Laverne, boldly went on social media and mentioned that when possibility of Ron Goldman, he was emphatic about making sure that none of the assets owned by O.J. Simpson would be available to any kind of lawsuit from Ron Goldman's family. And he did it in a manner which was probably abrupt and sounded cruel, and on second thought, upon reflection of his statement, he kind of walked it back.
Yeah.
You know what? It was the passing of his longtime friend and his client, and was probably a little emotional when responding to the possible lawsuit or getting assets from O.J. Simpson's family and his estate. So he walked it back and said basically that, yes, they would try to accommodate the Goldman family if they had any legal claims. to the O.J. Simpson estate. And I don't believe that his beneficiaries are his children. So there is some question as to the kind of exposure that the estate has for the Goldman family.
All right, Terry, let's get your thoughts.
Okay, so one interesting part about all of this is that CTE, that autopsy and studying OJ's brain.
Sure.
So for the public, it's ATM after the murder, this huge crescendo. Okay, now we're finally going to figure this out, whether or not there was brain injury involved when these murders occurred. And so now, of course, we've learned that the family has said, you know, no way, it's not going to happen. I did find the decision not to do so a bit perplexing, but this, of course, is not a public decision to make. This is a decision that is made privately among OJ's family members. It's interesting, especially since OJ himself admitted in an interview, this was back in 2018, and, you know, he said, well, you know, I'm concerned about short and long-term memory loss. He said there were days that he was struggling to find the words or to recall a name. And then during this interview, he actually quipped, you know, that's my CTE kicking in. And you look at mood swings and aggressive behavior and depression, they're all symptoms. So why not? Why not seek some answers? And, you know, I consider this is, you know, bells and whistles going off everywhere in this case. In the Nevada prison where he was serving time for robbery, one of the guards there reported that OJ would wake up in the morning and ask about tea time, of all things. He's thinking of golf while he's behind bars. So, you know, I would question the wisdom of not moving forward with the study and possibly getting some further closure, if possible.
Sure. You know, there's, in terms of, how the remains would be handled. One of the things that I think that a lot of people really wanted was additional closure, additional validation for how they felt. Of course, a lot of people feel like O.J. Simpson was guilty despite being acquitted of the murders. But at the end of the day, with it being the family's decision, you know, people have to consider the fact that no matter what he did, right or wrong, he still someone's father, and they look at him like he's their father, and that's the only father that they have, and that's all that they're going to get. You know, I remember seeing a movie some time ago, and it made me reflect on my own father. But in the movie, I believe it was Road to Perdition, just for those who want to check it out, but there's a line in there that says, you know, sometimes people ask me, was my father a good man or was he a bad man? And my answer to that question is, he was my father. And I think that that's really profound because, you know, our family members aren't people that we necessarily get to choose, you know, unless we're talking about a husband or a wife. Outside of that, we're just related to these people. You know, you get what you get and you make the best of it. And so I can imagine how grim and gruesome that would be to just know that there are people kind of dissecting your dad after he's, you know, he's still a human being, despite, you know, right, wrong, or indifferent. And this is not me trying to show any undue compassion. I'm just trying to suggest that maybe there's a reason why the family did not agree to, you know, getting him checked out, because there were certainly some people that wanted to examine his mind and see, of course, if there was not just this injury, but if there was some sort of predisposition to, you know, again, these violent tendencies and so forth and so on. So I really can't be mad at that. You know, sometimes life just doesn't give you the closure that you want. And it's unfortunate, but, you know, it's the decision of the family, and they're the people that, you know, we assume knew him best and will grieve in this moment. And so, you know, rightfully so, that it's their choice to decide what to do with their father's remains.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. People don't always realize just how much their negative thoughts and experiences stick with them and weigh them down. You may find your brain constantly running through a highlight reel of bad moments. That comment your friend made last week that hurt your feelings. That frustrating thing your mom does. Or that silly thing you said in a meeting. Maybe it's time to get it all off your chest. Whether it's a tiny annoyance or something much bigger, talking about it can give you some relief and lead you to a potential solution. That's where therapy comes in. It's a safe space to share whatever's weighing you down and learn to process it so your internal highlight reel can focus on the good stuff. And BetterHelp offers affordable online therapy on a schedule that works for you. Connect with a licensed therapist by text, phone, or video call. Start the process in minutes and switch therapist anytime. Let it out with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/BIN today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/BIN.
I'm Elliot Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true. And I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things and thank you for overcoming them.
Thank God for the limits.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed, and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Black Information Network news anchors Terry McCready and Kevin Brown are here with us discussing this week's major stories. All right, next up, Black South Carolina Senator Tim Scott has launched a new video series focused on five Black Republicans. And the true purpose behind the series is raising some eyebrows. Terry, share with us the latest on this story. And then, Kevin, we're going to want to hear you weigh in next.
All right. So Tim Scott, he is, if nothing else, an ardently staunch Trump loyalist. Mm. And it is a high stakes moment for many of these VP hopefuls. As you know, the speculation is swirling about who Trump will select as a running mate. And so this series, America's Starting Five, is really a golden opportunity for Black conservatives to sort of get in there, raise their profile, begin a 10 toes down kind of appeal to Black voters. And this roundtable will continue, from what I understand, through the summer. That's the objective. And Tim, for himself, is hoping to use his charm offensive, you know, the everyman sort of affability that, you know, we saw when he was, you know, running for the presidency himself. And it's seen as an asset. And is he onto something? That is the big question. There's an NBC poll out that found that Black male voters under 50 polled the lowest ratings for President Biden. And the highest ratings were for Trump. But if you look closer, the caveat is that a majority still viewed Trump unfavorably, which I thought was a very fascinating twist. And so I guess now we'll just have to wait and see how well received the five GOP heartbeats, I guess they're like the Black Temptations, are going to be. We'll see.
All right, Kevin, let's get your thoughts here.
Well, well, Mr. Tim Scott, here are some of the issues that won't be discussed during this panel. Racial disparities. Mm. For Black people, Pew Research has a study in which across the board, non-Hispanic whites make 20, 30, 40, and 50% more median income than Black Americans. You won't hear Tim Scott and his panel talk about environmental justice, which is rampant in the South, in Louisiana, and in Texas and in Mississippi, where factories with cancer-causing emissions are built near Black neighborhoods universally throughout the South. Mm-hmm. You won't hear Tim Scott and his panel discuss about the, oh, especially in South Carolina, and this is right in Tim Scott's backyard, how Black farmers are fighting to get their fair share from the federal government.
Government, sure.
And President Biden included in the budget, last year's budget, a supplemental opportunity for Black farmers to be made whole because they have routinely been absent from government contracts. And whenever things like that happen, of course, Republicans sue. Another issue that Tim Scott and his Black Republicans won't talk about and probably ignore, voter restrictions, which his party embraces wholeheartedly across the board. Mm. So they can argue that they are representing a slice of Black America looking for an alternative. But on the issues that are most important to Black people, you will not hear Tim Scott and his panel address any of those issues.
Yeah. You know, there's that was brilliant, by the way. Well said. There's something about Tim Scott that is particularly disturbing to me. I've seen, you know, Black men kind of act goofy and say goofy stuff from time to time so that they could be accepted by white dude bros so that they could fit in. And maybe they were pretending to do that, and maybe that's really who they were. But it's when you see a Black man trying to fit in, going above and beyond the framework of what their character is. And you can see the trying part. You can see the reaching part. You know, if this is who you are, and this is, if you grew up a certain kind of way around certain kind of people, it feels a lot more authentic, you know. But when you see people reaching and kind of pandering, it's particularly embarrassing, especially when it's a Black man doing it to, you know, a white person, and they sacrifice their Blackness, or they downplay their Blackness somewhere along the line so that it can't be weaponized against them by these white folks. Right. And they end up singing, you know, white folks' greatest hits, you know. They talk about reverse racism. They talk about, you know, how race, we live in a post-racial society, all these sorts of things. Right. And this happens at every level of society. But to see it happen at this level of society with someone who really does come from, you know, a traditional kind of Black American origin story, it feels so embarrassing. Like every time I see this guy's name in the headlines, I'm like, oh, man, what did he do now? And the thing is, more than Black people, he gives white people license. Him and a handful of others, they give white people license to continue doing what they're doing because they can look at him and his proximity to them to do the mental gymnastics necessary to say, you know what? Me voting against providing equitable treatment for Black farmers is not indeed the racism that I know it is, because if it was racism, Tim Scott wouldn't be my friend. And we all suffer as a result of that, right? So that's why I say, like, people like him, and he's probably in the best position to be like super goof. You know what I mean? And so, again, it's just really disturbing. I would say that to his face. I wouldn't have a problem with that. You know, I'm not like, I'm a man. I'm not going, you know what I'm saying? Like how he did that about face with Donald Trump. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'll say how I feel. I don't have a problem with that. But I think to your point, too, Kevin, when you were discussing, or I think it was probably you, Terry, that when you were discussing the how Black men, younger Black men, it's looking like Trump is in their scope. A lot of young Black men, Trump is in their scope instead of Biden. I don't think that that's a reflection of Trump being the man all of a sudden, as illustrated by the fact that, you know, you mentioned that many of the black men that were polled view Trump unfavorably. I think that that is the swelling of the narrative, valid narrative, that Democrats are taking advantage of the black vote. And that being discussed in very prominent places on and off the internet has gotten a lot of people to consider alternative actions. I know, and I don't think that a lot of black men in their heart of hearts sincerely agree with Republican, deeply conservative philosophies, as you can see that they do not, that that group does not support us. Indeed, they actively work against us. And they try to tell us a version of the story that some of us buy into, of course, that, oh, no, this is good. This equal playing field gives everyone a fair shot. When the fact is that, you know, a secondary conversation, not about equality, but about equity, and that's the real equality, is all it needs to reset the thinking. It's like, oh, yeah, that makes more sense. Right. But again, because Democrats historically have kind of really taken advantage of the black votes, just kind of assumed that it would be there. I feel like the strategy, it may not be an organized strategy, but I feel like there are some people that would vote for Donald Trump as a protest vote. What has Joe Biden done? Now, to be fair, Joe Biden is kind of making up some ground with the student loan, you know, stuff. But, you know, we didn't ask for that. We asked for police reform in 2020 when we voted him in. We asked for, you know, like systemic changes. And, you know, for whatever reason, those things have not happened yet. And then, of course, you know, Joe Biden, his treatment of the Palestinian-Israeli conflict has not won him any additional votes from our people, I don't believe. You know, when you look at Trump as a protest vote, you know, a lot of the numbers and the data starts to make sense. Now, I can't obviously confirm whether or not that's true, because, again, I don't recall seeing anything organized to the degree that we've seen in the Arab American community, where they organized their voting to vote for no one instead of voting for Joe Biden in the primaries. That's what I would attribute that to. I don't think that, you know, folks are in love with Donald Trump, certainly after his first term, because Donald Trump didn't do anything for black people. You know, he let some folks out of jail. Cool. You know what I mean? But the laws are not changed. You know, marijuana is not legal at the federal level. You know, there's a lot of things that the president can do. And historically, if both sides are getting left out, then maybe this protest vote is the last vote that people can cast before they disconnect entirely. And then no one gets our vote because it doesn't make a difference. Right. And so I can respect people that feel that way. I obviously would never withhold my vote, because I believe that a vote is the only way that you shape the democracy in which you live. And if you don't vote, you can't complain. But, you know, there are people that make a case that, you know, voting for the other side or withholding a vote is their form of protest. And, you know, I can't say that it's not valid. It's just not as valid. So, you know, we'll see what happens. But in the meantime, I'd be happy to never have to read about Tim Scott again. All right. Now, for our final story this week, this comes from a small Kentucky city where one black mother claims racial bullying is going unchecked at her daughter's middle school. Kevin, let's hear from you first on this story. Tell us a little bit about it. And then, Terry, we're going to come to you to close this out.
Oh, my goodness. This is a symptom of a much larger issue. It's universal for all parents with children who are in diversified or majority schools, that the culture in the past 20 years has shifted. And it bleeds into some of the things that you were talking about with Donald Trump, this coarseness, this cruel and sinister behavior, the lack of civility and morals, which has bubbled into popular culture, in part due to access to social media. And all black parents realize and know this, that when you send your children to school, they will have to deal with bullies. In diverse situations, your children will call the N-word because it's part of the popular culture, especially in music. Under normal circumstances, parents would go to administrators to get assistance in dealing with bullying situations. But because those same administrators come from the same culture that produced the attitudes that are affecting your children, there's a strong possibility that not much will be done. And the alternatives, other than parents getting involved with the schools, documenting the behavior of the bullying, there isn't much parents can do outside of that in a public school situation, because there are so many students who, and so many parents and families who buy into this new confrontational attitude, lack of moral situation. Charter schools is an opportunity, but that doesn't necessarily mean that your children won't be bullied there. So one of the things that has to happen is that you have to educate your children on how to deal with difficult people, regardless of how young they are. This has been the lesson for, because I'm an affirmative action baby. Mm-hmm. I was born in the 50s. And a lot of the teachers that taught me as I was in elementary school were teachers that did not want to teach black children. They were forced to by the government. And one of the things that had to happen is that early on, my parents gave us the skills to deal with individuals and institutions that were not friendly to us. Mm-hmm. And I think we are going to have to see more and more black parents adopt those kinds of attitudes with their children. That is, you're going to have to develop a thicker skin in addition to trying to deal with the evil and the sinister attitudes of the school administrators and the parents who honestly don't care.
Sure. Terry, let's get your thoughts here.
Yeah, this matter is really so fraught with intensity that, you know, this is 2024. Remember Ruby Bridges? She was tormented. It was 1960. Mm-hmm. Here we are. So that's why this is astonishing on so many levels, from the students who are targeting their classmate, this brand of unbridled racist brutality, to the school district for allowing it to perpetuate, to go unchecked, and to the very core of this issue. But it's just simply a young black student trying to get an education in a safe space to which he is entitled. And, you know, why are parents having to pull out all the stops to force officials to address this? It appears that they are almost complicit under the circumstances. And how many, if any, of these kids who are doing the tormenting have been suspended? How about parental accountability, as Kevin mentioned? Where is it? Does it exist? And so thankfully, this African-American coalition, which is an offshoot of the county, has launched a human rights violations investigation. So it will be interesting to see how this all turns out.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and this is not an isolated incident. It might sound very localized, but this sort of thing actually happened to my co-host on Civic Cypher, his son. He is in first grade, if I'm not mistaken. And this might be 2 or 3 weeks ago. We actually talked about it on the show. He had a bully at his school that pushed him down, kicked him, and called him the N-word. And the only way that, because the school officials didn't know about it, but the only way that Q, my co-host, found out about this happening to his son is because his son came home and told him that it happened. And then he had to get involved with the school, and there was this whole thing. So, I wouldn't disagree that it's probably the result of, you know, the Trump effect, you know, decency and, you know, the things that we were kind of working toward kind of flew out the window. It really emboldened a really gross underbelly in this country. And unfortunately, it looks like our kids are dealing with it. So we're going to have to pay attention to that. But for now, I'd like to thank you both very much for your time and for your insight. Once again, today's guests are Black Information Network news anchors Terry McCready and Kevin Brown. This has been a production of the Black Information Network. Today's show was produced by Chris Thompson. Have some thoughts you'd like to share? Use the red microphone talkback feature on the iHeartRadio app. While you're there, be sure to hit subscribe and download all of our episodes. I'm your host, Ramses Ja, on all social media, and I'll be hosting another episode of Civic Cypher this weekend on a station near you. For stations, show times, and podcast info, check civiccypher.com. And join us Monday as we share our news, with our voice from our perspective, right here on the Black Information Network Daily Podcast.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.